saying nothing, lying where the sun is, baking down upon our sides.
Welcome back to the Bruce Allen Show, A Dad's Point of View. You can follow me on Twitter at Bruce Allen, and you can write to me with any thoughts, comments, or criticisms to Bruce at BruceAllen.com. Sherilyn Harley Laban is not with us today. She is out there fixing the world, and I'm very grateful for those efforts. In her stead, I have Dr. Liz Mathias with us, who is a licensed clinical psychologist, certified school psychologist, and she specializes in assisting children and their families with autism, ADHD, anxiety, and learning behavioral disorders. She focuses on well-aligned parenting styles via parent coaching, consistent home environment, and the establishment of boundaries and behavioral expectations in helping children and families realize their fullest potential. Thank you so much for joining me again, Dr. Liz.
What a pleasure it is to be asked to come back.
Well, you're asked to come back because you have a wisdom to share, not only for me, but for all of our listeners, and I value and appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We have Father's Day coming up, and I know you have some thoughts in general about fathers, but I was talking about the role that a father plays, and in some cases, the lack of appreciation that is expressed publicly or in media. And I've hit that topic a lot, but what I'd like to ask you first, if I may, is what I talked about at the end of the previous segment, which is many parents are estranged from their children, and more children are estranged from their parents, and I suggest often for trivial reasons. I can't imagine you've ever dealt with any parent issues in your therapy practice. I'm sure that never comes up.
Oh, never, never, never.
of course it comes up very regularly. Obviously, I was kidding. I would like your thoughts on that idea that, you know, too many kids, and I mean that kids from, say, 15 all the way up to 50, stay mad at mom or dad for really a reason that's not worthy of it. And then, God forbid, mom or dad pass, and you are unable to make it up, make time with them, or say any of the things that you may have wanted to say, including expressing why you're upset with them. So what are your thoughts on what I have to say about that?
Well, I think families are very interesting creatures, and the older I get, the more I get to realize my own, meaning the family that I was born into and then the family that I'm creating. And one thing we do is we take on roles in our family. Each one of us does. And those roles become very perpetuated over time. You know, I take on my role, my sister or my brother take on their role, and it's hard to change it. And I think in, even as we grow up and grow older, we only really come to realize what those roles were when we have our own families and we see the roles that our children play and who we become. And it's almost like you become actors in a play, and everyone has their role and you maintain that.
And you get comfortable with that role, even when you may know that it's not always working, or worse, that it's destructive.
Right. And it's very true. Our awareness is very limited, and even grown people who will leave their families to, you know, go to college or live somewhere else, come back, and everyone goes right back into their role, and you sit at the same place as you did at the kitchen table, and you say the same things, and you fight over the same things. So one thing, you know, that happens during adolescence is that this need for independence. However, one thing as parents and as society that we need to remember is despite our children and our adolescents' need for independence, they still need to have a home base. So we still need to be that sounding board and to be that place of validation. And as our children get older, we want to make sure that we are offering that validation and not being as judgmental. When you think about yourself going back to a parent or a relative, you go to that person not because you want to be judged, and you choose who that's going to be because you know you're not going to be judged, that person is going to hear you. And out of that feeling of being judged, whether it's true or perceived, is we start to develop these bad feelings towards other family members, fathers, and we withdraw. And that those patterns just become very instilled in our relationships overall. But specifically, we're talking to our relationship with parents and dads today. And, you know, in an effort to make amends, I think it's so easy just to start off with what happened. you know, just saying to someone, I just want to know what happened, or making very simple statements, not needing to get into the heart and into the depth of it, but just to say, I'm feeling angry because I don't know what happened here. Can you explain to me? And just using those statements, despite how highly emotionally charged the situation may be, because in the end, we're social creatures. We need to be part of a family. We need to be part of a group and have an identity through that family. It's a basic human need. And you can see how as our children grow, they create little groups of friends, and they need to belong to that group. And that group has an identity.
Oh, that group is at certain ages, certainly in the teen years, at least in my experience, takes priority over any other group.
And that's normal and it's healthy, but still balancing that out with family time, because children still, adolescents, they still need and want family's approval. It's really a big farce that you think, oh, my kid's an adolescent, they don't need me anymore. It's not true. They do need you. They need you as their stable rock. They might not want to spend as much time as they did in the past. I look at my children now, and they still, well, my 5-year-old and my 18-month-old, they still want to spend time with me, and they think I'm so cool. But I'm looking at my 8-year-old, and he's just, you know, he's kind of like, yeah, I want to spend time with you, but not in front of my friends. And I really want to spend the majority of my time in front of with my friends. Yeah, I go to his school, and he'll say to me, you can kiss me, but I can't kiss you. And
I
thought that wasn't
so
going to happen until middle school. Like, it's saddening, but I understand.
I love it, Dr. Liz. You know, I will ask you another question that I'm really, I feel strongly about, but I'll be curious your take. It's my belief that young people, and I'm going to talk about older kids than your kids, my age kids, say anywhere actually from, say, 13, 14 on up to their early mid-20s, that their knowledge base is much greater than maybe any previous generation. Their access to technology, their access to some of the things that were taboo, like naked girls. Mm-hmm. All that stuff is much greater than it ever was, yet their maturity, to me, seems lacking, their ability to be independent. So there's this odd conflict or contrast between kind of working knowledge of the world, access to so much, and yet not working knowledge of how to function, which is why so many kids are living at home so much later, in spite of college degrees, and also because of some economic problems. So what do you think?
I think the pendulum has swung in the opposite direction, whereas the push from one generation of parents was independence, independence, independence. We realized that it created a lot of anxiety, and we felt, you know, that we were being thrown out too early, and now parents are kind of doing too much for their kids and not letting their kids and adolescents kind of figure it out and make their mistakes and learn how to be resourceful. I think we're protecting our kids too much from the ugly parts of life that we experience that we don't want our children to experience, but we're actually doing them a disservice because it is breeding a lot of anxiety and depression because they don't know how to solve problems. They feel hopeless. They feel helpless in the face of a dilemma, and they want to run home and let mommy fix it for me. I'll let mom write my personal statement for college because I don't know how to write it. Or, you know, I'm going to have mom call my employer and tell him I'm not feeling well today.
I'll send dad to my job interview instead of me. Kidding, of course. You know, I had a stark reminder of this and my own occasional guilt in not or poor parenting and not teaching my kids some level of independence when I went car shopping with my 17-and-a-half-year-old because we were going to buy or lease a car that the boys are going to share. Mm-hmm. And his knowledge about what a lease was, how you finance a car, how you negotiate or don't negotiate, was so little. I was stunned. He thought you go into a car dealer and the MSRP is what you pay, like going to a market. And it wasn't because he was dumb. It's because I never taught him. Up to this point, every car I'd ever bought, I went and did it on my own. And I usually would show up with a new car and surprise my kids and we'd have a great old grand time. But my 17-and-a-half-year-old did not know any of the stuff that's involved in negotiating. He didn't understand what a lease was. I mean, it was amazing. Now, to his credit, he asked a lot of questions. And I think he learned a great deal. And in fact, I learned how much I had kind of dropped the ball. I wrote a column about it, which will come out in a couple, 3 weeks, which is how to buy a car with your son. So I don't think we're training our kids to be independent at all.
No, and that's a big thing for me, and I start young, is I'll say to parents, don't clean up their toys for them. Let them clean it up, even if it's going to take longer and they're not going to put it away in the same way. Give them chores. They need to feel a sense of responsibility and accountability at a very young age. Having them, I mean, things as simple as dress themselves, prepare breakfast for themselves, put on their own shoes, get their backpack, carry their backpack to the car. They need to be responsible for things at a young age. And, you know, I kind of push my own kids into things, and I'll say, you know, you want a play date? Go ahead, call. Call your friend.
Ah, wow. What a great that's a great example that I wouldn't have even thought of, especially at the age of 8 years old, which is your oldest. You know, I think a lot of what parents do today is out of guilt. With so many single-parent homes and so many dual-working parental homes, I think mom and dad end up feeling guilty. In the dual-working home, they're not spending enough time with their kids, so they end up indulging them and spoiling them, entitling them, and all the things that we've discussed. And then in the single-parent homes, and I can speak for myself, when my marriage ended, the mother of my boys disappeared, and I was raising the kids alone. And I just took care of a lot of stuff because I felt so bad for them. And I didn't teach them many of the things you just you know, expressed. And then when I got married again 5 years later, my second wife, who did not have kids, she took on teaching them to do their own laundry, to make their own bed. And they've been doing that stuff for years. So while they don't have all the independent skills, they have plenty. And I am grateful. But I was just so caught up in their hardships, my guilt or whatever for a marriage not lasting, that I coddled them. And I think that's too much of what's going on with today's parents.
I think along the way, we as parents develop the idea that we need to make life easier for our kids. And maybe the parents in the past and those generations weren't functioning on that premise. You know, we have this idea of I need to protect my child. So if my child is having a hard time with a peer, I'm going to go in and talk to the, you know, to this one and to that one, and we're going to get to the root of it, as opposed to just letting kids figure it out. And that's another thing I absolutely do practice in my home, is when my children are arguing or they have a friend over and they're arguing, I'll say to them, you know what, friends disagree, friends figure it out, and friends move on. So I don't know how you're going to figure this one. I don't know how you're going to figure this out. But you're going to have to figure it out.
That's great. That's really good stuff, Dr. Liz. You know, the other area that I think is getting overblown is this whole idea of bullying. Not every situation is one in which there's a bully. It could be almost like the friends example you gave, where people are just not getting along or not agreeing. And I think too often authorities, parents, are labeling things something worse than they are. Obviously, if there's a kid that's physically harassing, or a group of kids physically harassing another kid, and there's physical stuff versus just a little bit of name calling here and there, the kid deserves some protection and help. But I think too much we're labeling everything with a particular problem label. And I don't think that's helpful either. Just like I think the diagnosis of a lot of our kids and the willingness to call them ADHD or autistic or everything so fast, when maybe they're just a little hyper. I don't know how you feel about that, given that those areas are specialties of yours, but I think there's a rush to judgment and a rush to diagnosis that
I agree. I agree with you,
well,
because I see that my just using my son as my reality check, you know, I'll hear him say, this one was teasing me today, he's a bully. And I'll say, was he really a bully? And let's talk about what a bully really is, because I think it is being misperceived as, you know, you're having a conflict with a peer. You know, learning to be assertive, express yourself, demonstrate self-respect, even at this young of an age. Once those skills are instilled, they're there. You know, and are we quick to slap a label on things? Yes, I think we're a society of extremes right now. It's very disheartening to see, and I hope, you know, the pendulum does swing back to the middle someday, you know, just in our parenting overall, of we've empowered our kids a lot. We've given them a lot of decision-making capability. Yesterday I was sitting down with a parent, and I just said, you need to set those limits. You are the parent. I know your 11-year-old is mature, and she comes off as mature, but she's not able to handle these decisions. You've empowered her so much, and now she has this sense of empowerment, and she's scared because she doesn't know what to do with it. She's frightened.
Right. We haven't prepared her properly. Exactly. Yep. Listen, we're nearly out of time, Dr. Liz. Two things I'd like from you before we go is, first of all, I'll give you the opportunity to do a shout out to your husband or your father if you want to say something personal. And finally, and more, and equally importantly, let our listeners know where they could find you.
Well, I'm at www.psychedconsult.com. There's been a website change. www.psychedconsult.com. or 973-400-8371. And I do want to wish my husband a very happy Father's Day. It's unfortunate that he is traveling for business this weekend, so we can't celebrate him. But as soon as he gets back, we are going to celebrate him. And the kids are very sad that he's not going to be here, but we're going to call him on Sunday, and yeah, we'll celebrate him in many, many more ways once he returns. And sadly, my father passed almost 20 years ago, so I will send out a happy Father's Day to my mother's husband.
Ah, that's sweet. Well, thank you, Dr. Liz. Looking forward to having you with us again. And listeners, we're going to go on a break and be back very soon.
Thank you.
6'6", he stood on the ground, weighed 235 pounds. But I saw that giant of a man brought down to his knees by love. He was the kind of man that would gamble on luck, look you in the eye and never back up. But I saw him a-crying like a little whip pup because of love.